Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Monday. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Welcome to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompson.com and MaxineThompsonBooks.com. My novels are The Ebony Tree, Hostage of Lies, L.A. Blues, and an upcoming novel, L.A. Blues 2. I have several anthologies and one short story collection called A Place Called Home, and all books are available in print and ebook. Happy birthday to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., a man of vision, a man of peace. Tonight's guest is Dr. Rosie Milligan, a woman of vision. She is a best-selling author of 15 titles, publisher of over 200 titles, and founder of Black Writers on Tour. Her 2011 titles are How to Write a Book Made Simple, The ABCs of Preparing Your Book for the Editor, Printer, and Formatter, Departing This Life, Preparation, What You Need to Know to Get Your Personal and Business Affairs in Order, and her latest book is What to Do Before You Get Hitched. Good evening. How are you doing tonight, Dr. Milligan?
I am wonderful. Thank you for having me as a guest on your show. I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much for coming, and I always enjoy having you as a guest. It's like sitting at the feet of wisdom. As you say, we're both elders now, and we didn't stay here this long not to know something.
And we're glad to be elders. I mean, we talk about it in a cherished manner, you know, because it's just so wonderful. So many people didn't live to get this age, and some of those who got this age, they had not learned their lessons along the way.
It's true. I just buried one 21-year-old. We had another one die, so, you know, they didn't even have a chance to find themselves or know their purpose. Not too many young people know their purpose, and if they did, a lot of them wouldn't die in the foolish ways that they tend to die. But, you know, I guess when it's your time, so I'm just so grateful that I live to see this day and to have been in a second career, which is going into my 14th year. And I left the county October 31st, 1997, and I came and worked at your business in July or August of 1998, where you mentored me in the publishing business. But please tell the audience about yourself and your business, Dr. Milligan, your different businesses.
Yes, I wear many hats, and it's interesting because years ago, people used to laugh at me, and she's Jamaican, she's a nurse, she got a real estate license, and now people are, you know, beating down my door past trying to find out how can you do things that's parallel, because they was taught to find your niche and fill it, so they only wanted to stick to one thing. You know, I have a publishing company, and I have a business consulting company where we do estate planning, that's living trust, wills, preparing those documents. And meanwhile, just this year, Dr. Thomas, as you know, I went back and got my notary license. I had it some years ago. I just let it go and didn't renew it. So I went back to get it because in the process of doing certain paperwork, almost everything people have to do these days, as you know, it has to be notarized. And now they're having to be fingerprinted, you know. They're just the times that we're living in. But all of those things are parallel. So when a lot of businesses, as you know, on the West Coast and everywhere else closed down. Well, when things got slow, everybody have basically experienced some slowdown. But I was able to, being a registered nurse, I was able to supervise a couple of hospice patients for an agency. I have my notary license. And what I'm saying is for those who are just stuck on one thing and those who are allowing people to discourage you about doing multiple things by saying you are Jamaican, you got too many things, please don't be sidetracked. Whatever you can do and it's something you enjoy doing, have something to add on, because one business feed into another. So in addition to me speaking as a motivational speaker, I'm a minister. I just do whatever God allows me to do, and it's not a jack of all trades and a master of none. I can assure you that I've mastered all these endeavors that I seek.
Yes, and you always, you know, you taught me we were talking before the show about another health food place that went out of business. You also have a health food store. You have
a health food store, which I gave to my son, passed him, you know, legacy. You know, we need to pass something down. I'm still there. I still see customers, you know, who needing certain information, but it's all under one roof. You have to learn how to weather bad times. You know, they say tough times don't last, you know, but tough people do. During the decline, there's a lot of people who didn't know how to add on something different. We merged the bookstore with the professional business that we had next door, because it was a large place with the health food and bookstore up front as you walk through, and it really looked nice. I wish I had thought of that 2 years ago. I would have saved a lot of money. So, and people love it, because while they used to come over next door and they would say, go next door to the bookstore, and the clients would say, okay, we will. They go out and get in the car, Matt, go straight on home. But now when they come there for the taxes, they come for the trust, they're standing there, they're looking at the earth, they're looking at the books, they're looking at juice and water. I'm telling you, it just, we have to think outside of the box if we plan on making it in this era.
And we are living in some hard times. I noticed last year, I felt so good because I had one client I depended solely on a lot, and I think you gave me a lady's book to do research for, and I did that one, and then another job came where I started doing memoirs, and they're short. I've done 6 of them already where I semi-ghostwrite them or ghostwrite or edit them, and now they bought a fictional book, and I've got several people who are in line for me to ghostwrite their books, plus I'm doing my, you know, I'm expanded my freelance editing because more people are coming to me. Heard from 2 people today, and so another thing I want to do, of course, is get back out and teach once I get this cast off my leg. And I had an interview Saturday where she asked what was the purpose of an editor, and I told her, I said, I went to a black surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, who could have done surgery and put a pin in my leg, which would have really caused me a lot of health problems due to my other condition. And he didn't. He took his time, and he's reset this leg twice. And he said he'll do it again if he needs to. And it's almost healed because I'm older and it takes longer to heal. And I said, that's what an editor does. They don't try to tear your book down and make it harder for you. They reroute the tracks. A good editor will, and bring your story alive, and particularly a content editor, which is different than the copy editor.
Right.
And so just even that imagery, and it made me aware of when I was the first maybe 40 years of my life, all my doctors were other races. But now I have a black doctor who has sent me to get my throat surgery, and that surgery, my sister-in-law looked at it. Her sister has almost died behind the one she had 15 years ago. I mean, all types of complications that led to an aneurysm. She's been invalid for 15, 16 years. She said, Maxie, you can't even see the scar. So you can't tell me having people that even work on you and work with you. That's why I really put most of my focus on black writers, because they're the ones who need it. You know, having people that work on you and with you is a great thing. We've got to build our own infrastructure.
Well, one thing I like, I mean, you're such a great story editor, because I notice how you leave the writer in their own voice. And a lot of editors are not able to do that. They take a person's book and they try to change it into their voice. So when you put it in your voice, you're also trying to take that off into your experience. And our experience is what it helps us to bring out our story. And since the experience is differently and unique, you need to leave an author in their voice. So that's one thing I give you credit for, because I've seen your work, and I've seen other people work, and I've seen how they take an author, just tear them apart, And an author don't even know the book himself when they get it back. So I really applaud you because everybody's not able to do that. You just have a gift for that.
You know, recently I did a street fiction book, and it's Wahida Clark, and, you know, she's very well known with her Justify My Thug, and this is picking back up her trilogy of Payback. And so this one is Payback Ain't Enough. But I think she was happy with it because it's her story. The only thing, I just showed her ways that she could develop her scenes. But I love her voice. Her voice is, I mean, it's basically by being first person, is strong Ebonics. And it's street talk, and you'd have to know street talk. And you really, when you do street fiction, you have to learn the terms because the terminology changes every year because a lot of those terms are to hide and throw the police off. They're not there.
Right.
For the average person, you know, now mainstream America has picked up a lot of hip-hop terms, but they don't know. They've changed it this year, just a week ago, so that you don't know what it means. A lot of things are said for that reason, so that you would know what they understand, because it is a subculture, and it is, you know, a lot of times a colony. That the police, it's almost like living in a police state. The police have an antagonistic relationship with the people in that area, and so they have their own way of saying things, and that's what I really like with the street fiction, how you learn, and the language is so poetic and so metaphorical, and you really learn a lot, and yet it's great storytelling, and you don't have to take away. It doesn't have to be told in standard English. Witness how Wahida Clark has made the New York Times with her books. So her books are told in, you know, in that voice, and particularly when she does her first person.
Right.
And I think that that's good. So we need more editors that are sensitive to our culture. We've developed a few. The one that you trained, Dr. Milligan, and I trained, Alana Boutin, she's gotten very good with
right.
Black
she didn't
literature.
Know what the writer was talking about at first. It was so funny.
This a
light come back and ask. And tell you, it's really interesting. But you have certainly done a great work with helping street fiction writers to bring in some the redeeming quality of their work. And that's good because they do have great stories. And for people who really like to talk about the different books that are out there, it kind of irks me because if they think that the books that their young people are reading is to this and to that, and I say to them, at least the hip-hop generation, the subculture, whatever you want to call them, that at least they had sent her to pick up a pen and try to write what they saw. They did better than the people who have gone to university. They go through and get a do a dissertation, and you, what you do is your dissertation is really a book. And they don't even know how to come out and take that dissertation thesis and turn into a book and have the nerve to talk about these young people who are in the street or coming out of jail, but they're sure writing what they see. So I applaud them. And I applaud you for being able to help them to do it in a professional manner.
Well, thank you. And you've done a lot with, besides the prison ministry, a lot of people have come to you with their stories. There were stories that would have just died and went to their grave with them. And they've been some good stories, 90-year-old women. You've done a lot of memoirs.
Right.
A lot of people who've been to prison telling their life before they straightened up or got saved. You've had a lot of redemption.
Yeah, people who've almost died and have found a way to save themselves and telling people how to, you know, how to get through health challenge. Almost everything you can think of, even from, I would say, to 90, from 7 years old to 92, you know, I published Marquis' book, I'm Not a Problem Child, how he fought against the Board of Education when they said he was, should have been on Ritalin. He was a problem child when he was, his grandmother said, oh no. That's what I love about grandmother, and I feel sorry for people who grow up without a grandmother because she plays such an important role in the lives of her grandchildren. She said, oh no, this is not going to happen. So she took him, had him psychologically tested, and the kid is a genius. But they were getting ready to wash him away in the system because he would finish his work and wanted to walk around. I mean, what child 7 years old wants to sit down and just wait till somebody else finish when they're 30 minutes behind him? It was a poor teacher who didn't know how to teach and utilize this young man or give him other assignments.
And I mean, you just had given a lot of people a chance. Even the guy, who was the one who held his fist up at the Olympic and you published his
book?
John Carlos.
Yeah, John Carlos. Yeah, you know, I was working on a book for the Whispers, so hopefully that I'm able to get them to, you know, pull it back out and go ahead, because I think their story is such a wonderful story. And number one, it lends itself to the fact for us to take a look at a group. They are the only one based that's been out here all this time and have not even picked up new people, the original group. So it says something about what it takes to really stick together like that. So hopefully I can get them to go ahead and do that book, Mac. Even if it's just if they do an e-book, it's so colorful, has pictures of so many people, just a wonderful story.
Mm-hmm. And that's history, and they're from, aren't they from Compton or someone here?
Watts.
Somewhere?
Yeah,
Watts.
Yeah, Watts.
So we need to hear those stories, and, you know, we just have so many stories. I'm working with people that are just telling their stories, and their life, the way I see it, your life might not be a great, you might not have been a great person, but we've all had great moments, and until we write it down, we'll just die an unsung person. I've found that everybody is a hero of their own life, and they need to embrace that. And there's so much wisdom from the older people that they can tell how they've lived through the Depression,
right,
the World War One and Two, and there, you know, because that's what's happening. We have so many young people now that cannot cope with this. I'm seeing more young mothers killing their kids, more people jumping off a bridge, more murders, and it's because they can't take the stress of this economy. People robbing banks that you would have never thought down in Orange County. You're seeing professional men robbing banks because they're just stressed out, and that's why we need the older people to tell their stories, how they live through these ups and downs, the vicissitudes of life, as they call it.
Right. And that's why, again, in spite of the challenge, you know, economic challenge, I refuse not to do a Black Rise on Tour, and it's coming up. It's really right around the corner, Dr. Good. Thompson, because it's Saturday, April 21st at Carson Community Center. It's because what I've seen, that a lot of people, authors, have abandoned their book baby because they hear, oh, things are so bad, people don't have money. They don't realize that's why we are giving them tools for them to pick that baby back up and get to rolling with it, because people are still reading. It's just a non-traditional ways that people are buying books, because they're not buying it from the bookstore. Because you put your book in bookstores and you check with the bookstore, they're not selling your books. There's no reflection on whether people are reading or not. There are a lot of people, less people going to some of the bookstores. They're online, they're doing e-book, they're buying books at the beauty shop, the barber shop, from the back of people's cars. People who are speaking at events, they're buying their books. So I just want authors to know, don't buy into the hype that you have to just abandon your book, baby. People are still reading. In fact, people are reading because a lot of people laid off. They have more time. They're reading because of boredom. So, and if your book's not over the price, they're putting it into their budget, because I'm still selling books.
Right. And I read in the throwaway paper here that I get that 15 books on the USA Today list for self-published, the top books, the best books of 2011. And then I read, well, one of the guys, he was a thriller writer. He had, before taxes, he made $300,000 on his e-books. And Jay Conrad, I looked him up. And he's the one who started out with New York, but I was just reading his blog this month, and he had made $100,000 on his e-books. You know, he has a series of books, but he said that was in a month. So, you know, everybody won't make that at first, but with the new iPads and the this and that, and a lot of people still want the print book. But with all these new things that people are reading, the e-readers, and then Kindle, you can make a nice living. Different writers that I'm the agent for started selling their e-books, and there was some complaint, but I said, well, where are the people's royalties? And then that shut up real quick, you know. Hungry people are going to eat, and you can't tell them they can't make money. And some have had checks of $3,000 and $4,000 every 2 months, because that's what Amazon pays. So, you know, a lot of people are just leaving a lot of money on the table not pursuing these e-books.
Well, people are riding trains now. You know, most of your cities now are enhancing on the transportation system. So you have the railway, you have the streetcars. You have people, you know, really stationary, trying to get back and forth to work. So they're on their iPods, they're reading, their Kindle. So, I mean, every place you go, you see somebody reading something. They're not all just pushing their computer and playing games. People are reading. So we just need to fall in with the new technology. If you have an e-book, then you need to, you know, make it available. You can have e-articles. You can sell reports. You know, I'm launching a website now where people will be able to, you know, for a small fee, go and print down particular articles, reports that I have made that's pertinent to this time. You just have to think outside of the box, or you will truly die on the vine.
That's true. Well, let's talk about your different titles. Let's take them one at a time. The first one is How to Write a Book Made Simple. Let's talk about that one and where it's available.
Well, we did that with my sister and I, who's an attorney. We have authored the last 5 books together. It's How to Write a Book Made Simple and your publishing options. I think it's so important for people to know the different type of publishing option that they have and how they make money with each. Because like you said, there's a lot of people who are self-publishing. Some people want to start their own company. Some people don't want their own company. They want to get it published through, you know, through another company. So there's all kind of ways you can do it. We also point out in that book how not to get gypped and ripped off. Because some of these companies, they charge you a small amount going in to do your book, but then they make money on the back end. Once they print your book, it could be 100 pages. And then you have to pay them $7 and $8 for the book. So now here you have a 100-page portrait book that you're trying to sell for $18 and $20 because you're saying, well, I paid $10 to get it printed. That's because the publisher's making the money on the back end. That's why they're charging you a little bit going in. But with print on demand, it's changing the world. People can order 1 book, 5, 10, whatever you need, and you're not worried. You don't have to be bothered about having books returned. Because that was a big issue, Dr. Thompson, with a lot of book distributors and authors. They were paying authors for the books, and a year later, the books was returned. So the book distributor was taking a hit because they had already paid the author, and the author was not going to give them any money back. Sometimes they was out of business, wasn't even pushing their book anymore, and you were left holding the bag. With print on demand, you don't have to accept return once they buy the book. It's final. So it's just a new way of doing it. So that's why we keep doing the conference, so we can keep authors abreast on what they can do to make it work. And a lot of people who are doing books, as you well know, how they send you a book in all capital letters, no paragraph. So the ABCs of, you know, how to prepare your book, I just had to do that because of the type of books, Dr. Thompson, that you and I get, and we sit down and work on it. Other people wouldn't look at those books twice. Are they good stories? Yes. But the presentation is everything. The way they present it, they don't even stand a chance because the publisher just throw it right onto the side.
And so that's why it's happening a lot in the publishing industry right now. They're kind of in a turmoil where a lot of agents, I noticed, they're saying that they're beginning to become full-service agencies. They say, well, Dr. Milligan was doing that all along, and so have I been doing it. And, you know, I've heard people
they were talking about us, right?
Thought on the internet. How's she going to be an agent and do this? Now, I'm seeing where all the big agents have become full-service, and some are even trying to publish people.
What?
Yes, and there was a big fight where they had to click that down. They were going to publish some classics or something, and they took it, you know, they had to back up. But a lot of the agents are now charging for getting the books ready. And
yeah, because a lot goes into trying to prepare a book. When someone sends you a book, they don't even have a paragraph. And I know people listen, feel like I know that people are not sending anybody books. Like, yes, they are. I got a 300-page book once, no paragraph. No chapters. So the editors, I think, in the major companies realize now that they're missing out on some great work, but they're going to have to straighten it out and fix it up. In other words, they're going to have to change their baby diaper like we've been doing all this time and get them party trained before you put them out there.
Yes, and what I was doing for my writers, I'm not even before I was doing, you know, going in editing for free and all that. I can't do that anymore. I've got to.
You can't do it because you're really almost writing that book.
Mm-hmm.
And people should be willing, Dr. Thompson, to pay for service. You know, in this country in general, we're not manufacturing, not making a lot of things. America is service-oriented and driven. So the thing that people are paying for now is information, your knowledge, your know-how. And people need to be willing to pay for what they want because you certainly won't be out here many years if you allow people, if you had allowed people to continue to pour them off you and you constantly do that work. You wouldn't be in business along yourself. And even if you did, you wouldn't have a profitable business. And your quality of life would not be what it is now if you had not stopped the madness with saying, I can't do it for free.
Yes, they used to tell me when I first started, they would say, well, I don't want to go to Dr. Milligan because she charged. What do they think this is? This is a capitalist society. Well, I have no problem. I want better. All right, now, and I'll give a much higher price so that if they can talk me down, fine, but I don't start low. As the Joy Luck Club, I keep saying that saying from Joy Luck Club with a mother told her daughter, you must know your own worth.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you're giving a quality service, you don't mind putting your price tag out there. And I don't back down because I know I'm one of the best. I've been out here a long time. Not only am I published, I'm a writer myself, you know, and I've been at this so long that I know what I'm doing. They can't beat what I'm doing. When I have them go to other places and then they end up back where they started, well, can you help me straighten this out? I said, okay, same price. I didn't change it because you went off and went to somebody else. That price is not wholesale and it's not on sale. So whatever I told you when you were here before, that's what it is now. And they come back and pay their money.
Same how many people have hung out their shingles, and then there were people that we trained that could have been doing well today. That's why when they call me, and oh, no, I don't want to hear it, because you would not listen and take the training.
You know, we really train people. And people, if you have, you have to be trainable, teachable. Some people are not teachable. If you're teachable and you take your little bit and you find somebody who's willing to work with you in this publishing industry, you can be great. You really can. And that's one thing we try to show at Black Writers on Tour. We have a forum showcasing the different positions in this industry because, you know, you have people go all the way through college, have no clue that they can become an editor, they can become a proofreader, a graphic designer, illustrator. They have no clue all the different, the thing they can do in the publishing industry. It's a big field. Every magazine, every sitcom, you know, every play, somebody had to write it. And this is what we want the young people to see, the different jobs in the different industries. So last year we had graphic designers there, formatters, social media specialists, people who do tapes, and voiceover is going to become very popular, too, because a lot of people, we haven't really tapped the market, Dr. Thompson, because there are people who are still waiting for our books, you know, on tape, on CD.
They want the audio book because
yes.
A lot of people don't like to read. They like to listen to it when they're driving.
And this is what we try to do is show people, come on, step up your game. You know, we show them how to market, how to get more book sales. But for people who are not willing to invest, to go to conferences, you know, to be a part of paid seminars, they want to be on the outside looking in. Get in the game. That's what we keep telling them. Get in the game if you want to play. And if you want to play, you're going to have to arm yourself with the knowledge that's necessary to outdistance your competition, just like any other business.
A really good point there because it takes a certain amount of studying. You know, all you have to do is go online. We have more information available to the average person that used to only be available to very rich people. You can study all types. You can listen to free teleseminars. They got all types of information that you can find online for free. Then you can buy, you know, be willing to send some money. Then plus conferences that can teach you different things like Black Writers on Tour. I've gone every year since 97, 98, and I think I went to one in 95 or before. I mean, when you first started doing, how many years have you done?
This is the 16th year.
Wow.
So you have to find, you have to be persistent and consistent. People write a book, they run out there, Dr. Thompson, they sell it to their mom and their friend, and the book stop right there because they don't know how to push forward. I tell everybody with the book, you have a story, you need to get a hook for a press release. Pay somebody to do a nice press release for you. Let the world know that you have the book out there. You know, work with social media. You have email. Instead of just sitting up chitter-chatting on Facebook, find a way to market and to talk about your product. Because there are people. And I tell you another whole market, Dr. Thompson, we haven't even, we talked about it about 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. We have a whole other industry for our outlet with our books in other countries. There are other newspapers who love, who would jump hoops to get good African-American stories and press release. They want to know what we're doing here in America. But we're just so narrow-minded trying to be in one little corner, everybody running to the same bookstore trying to get their book in. Mm-hmm. You know, and your book is not going to sell just because it's in the store, nor because it's on Amazon.com. People don't get up every day and say, let me surface Amazon.com, see what book is up here.
Right. They're like, okay, there are a lot of groups within Facebook. Like, I'm looking at my Facebook page, Authors Corner, Urban Reviews Facebook. I think they have about 1,300 in their group. AANBC Authors Research, I know that's Tamika Newhouse. And then Authors in Focus, True Soul Publishing. And then when you're on LinkedIn, you can. They've got a lot of good discussions going on the self-publishing thing. I'm in about six groups related to publishing on LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn,
a lot of books on there too.
LinkedIn,
and, right? You give, you know, you can have articles, just discussions, and you know, participate in the discussions. Then put your link, and then Twitter, you know, indirectly can sell a lot of books. All the different celebrities. On there, I was reading where Gabrielle Union and her fiance, that they have, you know, up in the millions of people following them on Twitter. So, you know, for writers, though, I'm finding that a lot of people who are beginning to follow me, they're writers or publishers or in the industry, because I'll put a lot of information. I'll find articles on book marketing from, it's from Britain, but it has information that's international about the publishing industry. And I'll put a link on Twitter. You know, so share information. Don't just push your books. And then
right.
That's another way of selling your books, too.
Hey, Maxine, we have a couple questions here. Do you mind if I read them?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
All right, cool. This first one is from Abby in New York, and it reads, you handle, this is for the guests, you handle so many tasks and still manage to be a great writer. What advice do you offer for upcoming authors who are also handling multiple jobs, hobbies, etc.? And then after this one, there's another one. I'll let you answer first, though.
Okay, what you have to do is it's about time management. Like, I know that I'm going to work on my books. I've set the days of the week. If it's going to be Monday and Wednesday, I'm working on the publishing business. My clients that I have for Living Trust and Power of Attorney, there are certain days that I set those. So you don't get scattered if you manage those tasks. That's what you have to do. And I've learned to manage my time. I can't stress that enough. I don't get tied up with people calling me on the phone, complaining, who are not trying to do anything. I even decide how many minutes or hours a day that I'm going to allow people to talk to me on the telephone. You cannot answer your phone every time it rings. And some people, their phone, you're in the middle of your story of what you're doing, your cell phone rings. While the cell phone is ringing, if they can't get you on the cell phone, they dial you on your home number. We lose too much time with that telephone. It's a waste of our time. That's why you have voicemail. That's where email is important, because then you don't have to talk to the people. You can respond to them. Start using the email, because once you dial that phone back, if they need answer that question, because they will start telling you about a whole bunch of other stuff that has nothing to do with why they originally called you. So if you can manage your time, I'm not overly tired. I get plenty of rest. I enjoy my life, and people don't understand it. Well, how do you, you know, when do you get sleep? Plenty of time, because I'm not robbed by the TV time. I'm not robbed with the Internet. I choose the time that I'm going to respond to email. I set the time that I'm going to do that. I'm not going to answer you all through the day every time you click, send me an email. So that's how I do it. So I hope it helps you.
All right.
Very good. Yep, and I limited my Facebook involvement while I was writing L.A. Blues, too, over the last 6 weeks. I finished it the Monday after New Year's. And I went on there, and it's like I haven't missed anything. You know, I start back doing my show, and I put my shows up there. I'm not going to get caught up in Who Shot John, because Who Shot John doesn't put anything in your bank account.
No, it doesn't. Nor in your brain. You had another one?
Yeah. This next question is from Marky in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And this says, what specifically do you look for in an author or book when considering publication?
I look for a new twist, a book with a new twist, not the same old, same old. I remember when Terry McMillan wrote Waiting to Exhale, almost every book I got was almost identical. You know, people tend to not create anything new. They want to do something that's out there. Like I had one guy, he was a nonfiction writer. And Maxine, you knew him. And Dr. Thompson, remember he said, well, I understand that fiction is selling. People making money with fiction, so I want to be a fiction writer. That's not the way to do it. You need to stay true to your calling. If you're a self-help writer, if you have information that you want to share, you need to deal with that. But we look for good stories. And now, to be frank with you, more people are self-publishing or they're going under a company, a packaging company. And that's what I talk about in my book, How to Write a Book Made Simple and your publishing options, where you have companies that will take your book if you need editing, you need story editing. They do that. They do formatting, cover design. In other words, we know the people who do the best work. You as an author, you can take your book out there to some neophyte who said, oh, yeah, I'm an editor. I'm a school teacher. And you think because the person is a school teacher, they are editor. A school teacher, English teacher, and a book editor is totally different. But we're going to make sure that your product is a professional product delivered to you. And are you paying for that? Yes, because with the economy now, many companies are not taking on work that they're actually funding themselves. And I tell you what made me stop doing that, because once you put up all the money for the author, they have nothing invested, nothing to lose. They'll sell the book to their family and friend. They get excited, just like sometimes young people get excited about having a baby. Once their baby's here, they lay it to the side. They want Big Mama to keep it. They're dropping off here and there. The excitement is gone. That's the same thing happened with people with books. And you have put your money into their book, and they're not doing anything but sitting at home saying, how many books did I sell? And some really get carried away. They go on Amazon, Dr. Thompson, and they see that number. They think that's how many books they sold. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So just put a good work out there. If an author, if a publishing company is not looking for that type of information at the time and you feel good about it, and it's something that you're calling that you want to get out there, be willing to pay to get your own product out there. A lot of companies are not picking up and investing in authors' books, but they can certainly give you, for me, we can certainly deliver you the best product you're going to get. Your cover's going to be have shelf impact, your book is going to be properly edited. You just have a great book. And you can't tell these books now. You know how you used to go in the store, Dr. Thompson, people would say, is this self-published? You can't tell one book from the other because we're brought to professionalism where it should be.
True. The books that are with small companies look just as good as the books with the big companies, even some of these 99-cent Kindle books. Have great covers, good story. Those are the ones that are hitting the New York Times, some of these little 99-cent books from Kindle. So it's truly a time for the writer. If anybody that's a writer in this day and age say that they can't have a break, they can't get a break, then that's their fault, because you definitely, this is the best time in history.
That's with print on demand, Dr. Thompson. They don't have to go out getting 1,000 books printed. Once you pay for your pre-production costs, pre-printing. You never have to get the cover done again, the formatting, the editing. All you ever have to do is continue to pay to get your books printed. So it just make all the sense in the world. And don't put your book, don't bury your book, baby, because somebody else won't invest in it. It's your project. If you can't think enough of your own project to fund it, why do you think somebody else needs to fund it? You're not a what we call a celebrity. You're not someone that everybody knows. I mean, so what do you bring to the table to make a publisher want to spend their money on your book? You can't travel. You can't go on tour because you're locked on a job. You don't have a website. You don't have a follower. But you can learn. That's why we do these conferences, and people come from all over the United States. In fact, we had a couple of people here last year that came from Hawaii. One came from Alaska. It's important to learn how to make it work. It's really a business, and I don't want to be bothered with authors who don't see the book business as a business, because you really have to treat it like a business. And in a business, you have to do some form of advertising. You have to let people know that you're there. You wouldn't go open up a market and just sit back on behind the cash register and say, well, nobody came. It's the same way in the book business.
Right, because Dr. Milligan does an internet radio show, and I've been doing one for 10 years this March. And I'm looking at this book, How I Sold 1 Million E-Books by John Locke. And when I read his e-book, he was saying he did the traditional things, press release, publicist. He spent $25,000. He's made most of his by building a following on Twitter with his characters. And people start, and, you know, their series, and I think it's a serial killer, and just kind of outrageous type of books. But after he had about 5 e-books, that was the tipping point, and he sold a million. So he was one of the ones that hit the New York Times. And, of course, the big publishers have run to you then, but when you're unknown, don't have a platform, they're not going to just jump up and pay money to give you a book deal. And I'm not even seeing that many book deals as I used to see even on my publisher's marketing group.
Right, had major publishing houses that pick up many books of authors that I have published under my company or helped them to self-publish. Because they keep up. They see what's out there when they go into bookstores. They see, on the Internet, they see your book every which way they look. They're natural. They want to try to get that book because you already have a follower.
Yeah, but they're not going to build it for you. You have to do a lot of the work, even as it used to be writers just wrote their book, and then they could go back for a year, and they'd have a tour, and they could go sit down for a year, and then write another one, and that was it. But now the writer has to be able to wear all the hats and be a marketer, until their name really gets out there. The publishers don't even pay for book tours. A lot of people on that
can't. When you get out there, Dr. Thompson, you have to stay out there, because I know some authors now that I ask the question, where's blah, 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 because I don't even hear their name anymore. Out of sight, out of mind.
Right. A lot of them got lazy. They used to give out big advances, $250,000 like that, and they got that money. They wouldn't have sat down, but now you don't hear about them anymore. The authors that have been the most aggressive a lot of times have been the self-published authors. They're the ones who started the book club cycles where they go to book clubs and they'll even do phone interviews with book clubs. And, you know, a lot of the, I'm seeing too, where a lot of the New York authors are picking up things that the self-published authors do, and I don't blame them, because the self-published authors are more guerrilla marketers.
That's right. They have created a path that works, and many people, they don't use the blog. You got all this free stuff out here that you can use. Of course, you've done it for a month and you didn't get a sale. You can't go sit down. Be consistent. Just keep blogging. Keep doing what you're doing. That's how people get big. When people ask me sometimes questions, they talk about big shots. They may say, well, you're a big shot. How do you get to be a big shot? And I tell them, like I heard someone say a long time ago, a big shot is nothing but a little shot that kept on shooting. So you got to keep on shooting.
That's a good piece of advice there. Well, I hope that helps you, Marky. And I like what you said about time management, too. Well, let's talk about departing this life, preparation, and what to do before you get hitched, since we don't have too much time left.
Okay, well, one good thing about the departing is life preparation. We are finding that it's so many people, 50% of Americans have made no preparation for their demise or for them becoming ill or incapacitated. And we see it, so many people with Alzheimer's, dementia, and then they get where they cannot choose the person they want to make decision for them for their health or their finance. And the very person that you don't want to be in charge of your life, if you don't make a decision, most times that person is the very one running and taking over everything. And authors need to know, also in the estate planning, Dr. Thompson, that your literary work is also something that you need to put into your trust. Because many times upon your death, your books sell more than they've ever sold before. So who's supposed to get the royalty? Who do those books belong to? These are things that we need to leave in our trust. And most people feel like, well, I don't really have anything to leave. That's because you have not done an assessment. When you take a look at even your CDs, all the different things that you have, you will find that you have more than you think you have. So that's what we do there to help people. Like a lot of single people, they think, well, if something happened to me, I told Mama to take care of my daughter, my girlfriend. It's not like that. The biological father or mother have a right to come and get that child, and you can't stop that unless you've laid the legal work that the person is unfit before your death. But you can say, well, Daddy, you can come and get the daughter. I can't stop you from doing that. But my mother is the guardian over my house and over my finance that I'm leaving for my children. Does that make sense, Dr. Thompson?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
People think they can just name somebody. So you really have to make plans for your children. You can't just leave them up to chance in the hands of the state.
Mm-hmm. And you really, you know what happened with a good friend of yours, where she had a lot of property and the wrong person got a hold to it when she developed cancer.
And it was gone in less than a year. So you need to make some sense out of that. And don't end up in probate court with attorneys and you know, lawyer fees and court fees, getting all your money with stuff that could be left for your children. And the other book I did with What to Know, my sister and I, who's an attorney, wrote that book. Because we're tired of looking at the marriages where people are getting involved without asking questions. It's a shame. People ask questions after they're in the marriage, questions that they should have asked before marriage. You can really find out, Dr. Thompson, a person criminal record. There's certain things you can find out about that. There's a lot of information available. You need to know about a person's medical history. It's nothing wrong with talking about it. You get people that they don't talk, they get married, the person's on high blood pressure medicine, they're taking medicine that impacts them sexually, that impacts their sexuality. So you're going to need to talk about that before you get married. There's so many different things that people don't talk about. Their money. And we talk about what to do when your mother-in-law just don't like you, you know. And what about his bosom buddies? You know, there's some men and some women can't separate from their bosom buddies. They put them over their husband or wife. So you have to look at all these things before you get hitched so you don't have to begin unhitched or suffering a bad marriage.
I like what you said in there, too, about looking at a man and how he gets along with his mother.
Yes.
And we're not talking about mama boys, but you know, if he has a respect for his mothers and sisters,
right,
that makes a big difference.
Then he has respect for womanhood, you know. And people, one major question that people really need to also discuss before getting married, ask the person, are they into kinky sex? Because a lot of people are. And if you're not, you may be barking up the wrong tree, you know. I know a lady, her husband that she married, he loved watching pornography, and she started doing it with him for a while, and then she decided it wasn't what she wanted to do. And then she learned that what they were looking at is what he wanted her to do. So, you know, and he spent most of his time now alone, you know, in the garage. But see, she would have known this if they had really gone into deeper conversation.
And also with the download issue.
Right.
Women have to almost evaluate and ask about that, too.
Right. You know, so some of them would tell you if you ask. But some people are so eager, so desperate that they don't care. They feel like, if I take you to church and that pastor lay hands on you, he's going to get that demon out of you, and it's not that. Mm-hmm. So it's just things that people need to know on an everyday basis about the person's job, how long, if they have child support? How is your status with Internal Revenue? Because if you get married and you file together, they're going to take your money too. Mm-hmm. Or you get married and try to buy a house together, he have child support liens outstanding. It's going on the property. They're just things that people sometimes, Dr. Thompson, have no idea. They don't know. So in other words, we're putting these things out there in your face about things that you do need to know about before you make that great commitment. Doesn't mean that you can't work any of them out, but you certainly will be able to make the best choice that you can make.
That's a really good book, because with the marriage rate and divorce rate being 51%, and I'm thinking that it's probably higher than that. It's just people haven't filed for the divorce because of the recession.
Yeah, I think people are trying to get back together right now, okay?
Yeah. But it is really, so those are some good pieces of information. People need little simple information. Before, we didn't have it, just like they didn't talk about sex over
right.
the years, and that's why everybody, now we need to know about AIDS, the HIV status of the person. There's so much you got to know now.
Right. You know, just like even you have to find out, does that person want to have children? People get married and then find out the man said, well, I don't want any children. Then a woman will go and try to spring up a baby in a way. In the scenario in the book, we show where this man walked out of marriage because he told a woman, and people thought he was so wrong. They agreed that he didn't want any children, especially within the first 5 years. So she thought it was cute to go ahead and figure once she got pregnant, you know, and have the baby, he was going to change his mind. That's not the kind of trick to pull on anybody. It really isn't. And if you're with a man who's not paying child support to his children, what make you think he gonna take care of yours? It just things that people need to know.
Right. I guess people can delude themselves, and so your book is just kind of in your face and make you say, no, you're not no exception, and he'll do different by me, and he's going to do this. And so that's good that you're writing a book. These are the type of books that people who have lived and been through things can write. There are so many books of information that you can share with people to save them from going down the wrong road, because we didn't have books like this before.
Right. And they can go to www.professionalpublishinghouse.com to see all of my books. It's www.professionalpublishinghouse.com. And those who are interested in the Black Writers on Tour Conference, April 21st, go to www.blackwritersontour.com. That's www.blackwritersontour.com. And if you got a story, I mean, just go ahead and tell it. Don't be afraid to invest in yourself.
How about your other websites? Don't you have a new website you were getting ready to launch?
Yeah, I'm launching a website called drrosessextalk.com. That one will be up in about a week. And I'm doing one, Dr. Rose's Sex Talk and Relationship for Teens, because they do not have a voice, Dr. Tom. We don't know what our young people think. Only somebody they have to talk to themselves, and they are spreading ignorance. You don't know. It's like the pot trying to deal with the kill, you know? And that's so sad. We don't have a talk show. We don't hear that voice. We have no clue what young people think, and do we?
No.
So I'm in the process of launching a night show for teen talk, for teens to call when they have problems and talk about what they're doing. And I also, on YouTube, they can also find my, I have my tapes up there on Church Let's Talk About Sex, what Finance and Romance in Adult Relationship and Finance and Romance in Teen Relationship. Dr. Thompson, if you listen to that, you would be surprised at what teens are thinking about sex, finance, and romance. It will blow you away. And there's too many questions that, you know, they don't have nobody to talk to. Mother, father feel like, well, mama should tell you. Grandmama feel like, well, you shouldn't be asking this question. So how do they get answered? That's why we're having all these messed up marriages, because our young people not taught anything about relationship, sex, and money, how it fits, the do's and don'ts. It's important.
And money management. Money is the biggest killer of marriages. When you don't have enough money, everybody looks ugly.
And you're talking about, honey, why you not smiling when I come home? Because the bill collectors called me before I left home, and they called me at work, okay? That's the attitude. That's the behavior. It really does impact your relationship. But when you can talk about it, you know, then it can help ease the pain. But people not able to talk about it. You know, there's going to be some tough time. But what do? Then maybe you need to say, well, we don't eat out as much. Let's look at a budget. See, that's one of the things that in the book I wrote, Getting Out of Debt Made Simple, talk about budgeting. Families have to do it together. And then you can have a little bit more money left. Maybe you shouldn't have both of you going to church and you driving one car and he driving his. You may need to start to ride together more. You might need to park that car and take the bus. When you live a long way from your job and you're looking at the gasoline, we're going to have to inconvenience ourselves in these tough times. You might need to catch the bus.
Mm-hmm. And cook versus eating out.
Yeah. Right.
Because I know a young couple that makes pretty good money and they just eat out and they waste a lot of money. They just shop.
Yeah, and take your lunch. I mean, you got leftover, take lunch. You have to learn to cut back, and that's what people not learn. Don't jump when you go in someplace. The caller who asked me about managing my time, it's the same way I do. If I'm going someplace, I look at map out where I'm going so I can save time and gas. Why go to this side of town and then go over here and then come back and go over here? No, map it out. Make sense with your time and your money in every aspect of your life, whether it's the book business, any kind of business, or just being a housewife or a stay-home mom. Then you have more things you need to map out so you can continue to stay home.
Right. You have to plan things. I've always noticed this about you from the time I started working with you, you know, as your mentee. And that is that you don't waste a lot of time on the phone. I used to be a big chitter-chatter, and you would, okay, bye, Mac. Boom. After you didn't handle the business, you know. And I've gotten more to that. You know, you really have to evaluate almost everyone that comes in your life. Is this person just bringing drama that's going to make my health go down? Or are they trying to really make some changes and bring themselves up? And see, this was something I never evaluated as a social worker. I had this everybody's problem. No, you can't even listen to all of them because a lot of people don't want to change their problem. They want to keep doing what they're doing.
So you have to look at the mathematical formula, Dr. Thompson. You have to say that the people come into my life, do they add to my life? Are they addition or are they subtraction? Do they subtract? Or do they bring division? Do they divide when they come into my life? Or do they multiply? Look at the mathematical formula of everybody come in your life. Do they add? Do they subtract? Do they divide? Or do they multiply? And trust me, they have those personality traits that they can do all of those. So you want to look at who do you want. I want people that can add to my life, and I want those who can multiply. I don't need the division, neither do I need the subtraction.
I like that one. Look, I hope you got that in your Dr. Rosie. Did you give out the Dr. Rosie website?
Yeah, drrosie.com. All of the articles, the many articles that I've written through the years, you can go right there and click on and print them down, and there are many. In fact, I think she's putting up now the article, recent article called Sex, the Weapon of Mass Destruction. Absolutely incredible article. You can go to my website and download my different articles. You can see my books, listen to a few interviews. You can order my interviews from my radio talk show. So just treat yourself.
Okay, and your radio show is at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Right, from 10
Standard.
To 11, and we're going to be talking about the new laws that came in effect in 2012, how they can impact your life and therefore your pocketbook. And we don't need anything, any added expense. So if you know, then you don't have to be violating laws because they're out there. I mean, the city, the state, everybody's broke, and they're looking for new ways to make money. So. So do not fall prey to them.
I'm going to sure try to catch the show tomorrow. Well, thanks again, Dr. Milligan. As usual, it's been a great interview. I love listening to you. I'm sure the listeners and this show will be put up as an archive within the week so you can go back and listen. I mean, you've given out so much good information within this interview. You know, I can talk to writers. but it's not the same as someone who's had a career and have multiple businesses and have lived and you're still doing things. You're a senior. I have a lady, I went on her website, put old on hold, and she's in her 80s, and she's a firm believer that most of our gifts come after we become a senior, and I believe that. You know, just listening to you, you sound like a young woman with the energy of a young woman, but, you know, you got that wisdom, and that's what comes with living.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Thompson. It's always a joy being on your show, and I love what you're doing, and I love you. Continue the good work.
Okay, love you too, Dr. Milliken. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Have a great week. Love you all.